Morning.
Good morning.
I think Jay has a sense of comic timing. First time I was asked to speak here was 3 years ago on this Sunday. Of course, we don't pay attention to calendars, pay attention to the lectionary because of this text, but I'm going to fool him today and not talk about the Jesus Creed. Because each lectionary reading gives us options, so I'm going to take Robert Frost called the road less traveled. We're going to look at one word, a name. But first, an image. Some of you will know that last couple weeks, Chris and I and a few others, Bob and Joanne and my daughter Laura, took a trip to Turkey, some islands in the Mediterranean. Tough gig. Santorini, okay, you know, the one with the blue roofs. And then we went to Greece. And when we were on the island of Crete, I had two thoughts. One thought is, if you're going to suffer for the gospel, this is a good place to do it. It was pretty nice. The other is that we were taken to an olive farm. And on this olive farm, we got a passionate description, some of which we understood, about how oil is made on this countryside farm. And I don't remember the man's name, so I'll just call him Stephanos, which is a very safe name in Crete. And he described how when he was a young man, he didn't pay attention to his master, father, farmer, who was brilliant with oil. And so then he said, and he kept pointing to heaven, the father, the Lord had taken his father. And then he was left with this olive farm and didn't know what he was doing. And when he went to the university professors, they wouldn't help him. I think that's what he told us. Is that right? Something like that. Because they were in it for the business, and he was in it for the business. And eventually some people helped him out, and now he's a master farmer of olive oil. And when you go to the grocery store and buy olive oil, Italian, Greek, or Cretan, the farmer's name is not on the oil. It'll just say some kind of olive oil. But behind every bottle of olive oil is a master olive farmer. And we want to look at one of these behind-the-scenes characters in the letters of Paul today, who gets no attention, but he was doing all the work. Behind the scenes characters in the history of the church are often silenced. Sometimes they're abused, they're frequently ignored, and their names are unknown. Because of the silencing of voices, we saw this week with Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, what appears to most of us to be gross injustice. Easier to perpetrate in the case of someone whose voice has been silenced and who has become largely ignored in our culture. It is easier to perpetrate crimes against the silenced because they have no voice, they have no power, they can say nothing. We watched as Philando Castile's girlfriend, in stunning poise with her iPhone, videoed what was going on. Amazing. I thought, she's just talking about what's happening, like an independent, disinterested reporter. And we can be thankful for that kind of reporting because we saw what happened. We also saw reverse injustices occur in Dallas against policemen who were doing their duty and trying to keep protesters for justice in line and providing a safe environment for them to protest against injustice in our world. Silenced voices lead to actions at times that are impossible to understand. Ralph Ellison wrote a brilliant novel about black men in America called The Invisible Man. And if you've read the book, which you should read at some point in your life, you will probably get frustrated on about page 3 because the man has no name. And the novel goes all the way through with no name. And you're just wanting for him to give him a name. I gave the guy a name because it was too frustrating not to have a name. I called him Stephanos. It's a good Greek name. But that's the whole plot of the book, is to see that some people have been silenced so much in our cultures that they have become invisible. And I believe that the church's mission is to make invisible people visible, so that all people become known as children of God. That's our mission. And we want to look at one of these invisible people. You read about him, and you ignored him, and didn't even notice he was being mentioned today. It is not the sort of invisibility that the African-American male has experienced in the United States at levels of systemic injustice, but it is still a silenced voice. And we can learn from this person's voice maybe how to raise the invisible person to visibility and to give the silenced voice a platform for speaking. This man's name is Epaphras. And some of my students call him Epaphras because they don't even know how to pronounce his name. And yet, he was quite an accomplished minister in the first century. And I would be willing to say that apart from Joanne and Bob and Chris and Laura, no one in this room knows anything. They don't know diddly squat about Epaphras. And that's fair to say, because we talk about Paul. Behind the oil in a can is a farmer. Behind Paul is Epaphras. In Colossians 1:7, it says this: "You learned the gospel of God's grace from Epaphras, our dear fellow servant, who is a faithful minister of Christ on our behalf, who also told us of your love in the Spirit." Epaphras was a good gossip. He went to Paul and told him all about the Colossians. So I want to talk today about behind the scenes ministry, and use this as an opportunity at times to launch into bringing people who are behind the scenes onto the stage of life. Now, Epaphras was known in Colossae, which today is nothing other than a mound of brown grass. Last week it was, anyway. And it was 104 degrees. And it's not a nice place to be at 104 degrees. And the little Meander River is right next to it. And it hasn't been archaeologically uncovered, but it will be. Two Australians have the responsibility, and when the professor at Pamukkale University says it's time to do it, then they're ready to go. And then up the hill, up the streets, or up the road is Laodicea, and it was 106 when we were at Laodicea. In the Bible it says it's a lukewarm city. It wasn't lukewarm that day. And then there's Hierapolis, which is just a graveyard of archaeological rubble. A little bit there, but not much. Colossae, Laodicea, and Hierapolis had churches founded by Epaphras. Three churches. How many churches have you planted? Three. At least three by Epaphras. Okay? So first, a little bit of the life of Epaphras. I don't want to start mispronouncing his name. A little bit about his life so far as we know. In Colossians chapter 4, verse 12, we learn this: Epaphras, who is one of you, which means he's from Colossae, All right, that's something we know about him. He was most likely converted during Paul's second missionary journey, sometime when Paul was in Ephesus. Somewhere between 40 and 52, he was converted. We know that Paul never visited Colossae because it says in Colossians 2:1, I want you to know how hard I am contending for you and for those at Laodicea and for all who have not met me personally. So Paul had never been to Colossae. Epaphras had. Epaphras was ministering the gospel for Paul. He was sent on a mission trip, what's called the Lycus Valley. So it says in Colossians 1:7, the text that we looked at today, that they had learned the gospel, and so Epaphras had founded the church at Colossae. He successfully formed three churches. This is an odd thing if you're a first century Jewish apostle in Ephesus sending out strangers or locals into a valley and say, start some churches. Willa Cather said this right when she said they believed they were on the right trail for they had seen no other. That's Paul. He only knew that the job was to spread the gospel about Jesus no matter where, what trail you follow. So Epaphras was following the gospel mission that Paul had started. And in Philemon, verse 23, we also learn that Epaphras was imprisoned because of his ministry with Paul. It says, Epaphras, my fellow prisoner in Christ Jesus, sends you greetings. Now, this is probably, I think, certainly, a letter sent to the same church at Colossae, only it's sent to Philemon, who is a slave owner, about his slave Onesimus. So by this time, Epaphras is in prison when Paul sends this letter. So this is what we know about Epaphras. Converted under Paul's ministry, sent on a mission, he founds three churches, he struggles with some things, he ends up in prison. Not a bad story. I'd like to know more about what happened before, what happened afterwards. But we know these things, and he's a silenced voice, but we can learn plenty about ministry and about raising silenced voices to a vocal platform by watching Epaphras. So, if we've looked at his life now, I'd like to dwell on some points. First is this, behind-the-scenes servants are often engaged in ministry, and sometimes, like Epaphras, their ministry begins very quickly. Paul did not send Epaphras to seminary. Had he done so, it would have been to Northern. Paul was our kind of guy. That's what I like to say. I tried to talk Alex into that, but I've not done well. I say quickly because I have a little bit of a theory of the chronology of Paul's life at work here. You can disagree with me, but please, for the moment, give me my point, because it'll ruin it otherwise. I think Paul was imprisoned in Ephesus, that he wrote this letter from Ephesus, not Rome. So it was written somewhere around 53 to 55. Epaphras was probably converted in the early 50s. Give him a couple years around Paul, and he's ready to plant three churches. So he's immediately sent into ministry. Paul was a man of high expectations. He was a mentor, a discipler. He was disciplined. He expected people to go along with him. He learned to die to self, and he taught Epaphras the same thing. What's it like to go back to your hometown and plant churches? It's not easy. It's easy to go somewhere where no one knows you so you can establish your reputation as you do on Facebook and Twitter. But Paul and Epaphras learned to die to self. As Bonhoeffer once said famously, those who enter into discipleship enter into Jesus' death. They turn their living into dying. Such has been the case from the very beginning, Bonhoeffer said. The cross is not the terrible end of a pious, happy life. Instead, it stands at the beginning of community with Jesus Christ. Whenever Christ calls us, Bonhoeffer said, His call leads to death. Now, you may know the English translation that is famous. That's not accurate, but it's better English. When Christ bids a man come, he bids him come and die. It's not what Bonhoeffer said. It's his translator, R.H. Fuller. It's better than what Bonhoeffer said. But Bonhoeffer said, the call leads to death. Epaphras learned that. He learned that his life had died, and he was now living a life of mission. As Plutarch, the great Greek writer, once said, when people see a friend's house aflame, they extinguish it with all possible speed and strength. But when souls are ablaze, they add kindling. That's what Paul did to Epaphras. He saw this young man had a capacity to die to self and minister the gospel, and he threw cross all over the guy. And he took off for the Lycus Valley and planted three churches. Epaphras succeeded. He succeeded in building these churches, and these churches are known for their love and for their faith. And they struggled, but they succeeded, and he got the job done. I had a black student at Northern Seminary who had a habit of calling me when he was my student about once a month to have lunch at my expense. At a restaurant, not in my office, you know, not with sandwiches or anything like that. And we'd sit and talk about ministry. He's ministering in the city of Chicago, and he ministers in situations that I've never seen in my life. Very difficult. Food deserts and all. His name is Phil. And one day Phil said to me, have you ever spoken at the Hampton Conference? I said, what's the Hampton Conference? And he said these three things. 10,000 pastors every summer in Hampton, Virginia. Oldest pastors conference in American history. Third, no white people ever come. I said, Phil, not only do they not come, I've never heard of it. So I called my publisher, whose initials are Zondervan. And I said, do you ever have a booth at the Hampton Conference? You know what they said? What's the Hampton Conference? Epaphras all over, Phil. Epaphras all over the Hampton. Do we live in two worlds? Or the same world? So we learn from Epaphras that there are voices out there that we just don't know about. 10,000 pastors. The longest consecutive running pastors conference in American history. And I didn't know anybody who had ever heard about it unless they were black. What's happened here? Epaphras knows that there are things happening behind the scenes. You know, pastoring, Marilynne Robinson once said, is about being stewards of ultimate things. And that's what pastors do. They don't have to be known and famous to be stewards of ultimate things. They just have to be engaged with people behind the scenes in coffee shops, in hospitals, in other places, discussing what God is doing in this world. And that's what Epaphras was doing in Colossae, Hierapolis, and Laodicea. Pastoring is about learning to live the life of God that God has called us to do. As Brian Doyle once said, holiness wears different clothes every day. Because you never know what's going to happen. In Laodicea, it was different than Hierapolis and different than Colossae and Ephesus. Whoa, that was big city, big event. But he was out in the Lycus Valley ministering the gospel behind the scenes, and nobody today knows about him. Second observation, we have to move on. Behind the scenes, servants of God are willing to seek the wisdom and help of others. Okay, so Paul trained him. And so Epaphras goes to the Lycus Valley and he plants churches and he runs into some Jewish Christian types who are giving him more than a run for his money. Paul's in prison. He can't, get on, Twitter and say, well, you come speak in Colossae. We got some crazy people talking crazy things. He has to walk to Ephesus, where Paul's in